Good morning again. Alexandros Batsakis from NetApp. I'm going to present the Congestion Aware Network File System, joint work with Randall Burns, Arkady Kanevsky, James Lentini, and Tom Talpley. So what this talk is about pretty much very similar to the two previous talks. We have a framework for scheduling client operations in a distributed file system, but we're doing it based on the server congestion. So what's wrong with the current scheme is that you have all these selfish clients. They try to maximize their own throughput. They send a request to the server as when they have requests. And each one of these requests adds a cost to the system. Now, this cost eventually will lead to congestion because it causes network I/O, it takes up some of the memory, disk bandwidth, whatever. And these clients, they don't care about anything else. They just want their request to be served as soon as possible. And the only time that they stop is when their flow rate is satisfied. So this is what, you know, economists, they call like the benefit, let's say. But, you know, clients, they have a good excuse to be selfish because, you know, when we design all these distributed systems, we say, okay, the server will serialize all requests, will take care of, will do the best for the system, will make the throughput perfect. So all the clients, they don't know about anything about the server. They don't know how loaded the server is, or they don't even know if there are other clients accessing the server most of the times. So this work is about making the clients behave better. So to care about what's going on in the system and adjust their behavior. And what we do is we make them congestion aware. And we implement this in NFS. So that's the congestion aware network file system. So this work has two pretty much distinct parts. One is how to monitor the system users and quantify congestion. And the second is how to schedule the client operations based on that. So from the previous talks, it's obvious, and from the keynote talk actually yesterday, is that we need to somehow measure congestion. And people use throughput measures, they use latency, they use CPU, they use time utilization, the black box, gray block approach, all this stuff. And the thing is that it's really difficult to do that, right? Because you have all these heterogeneous workloads, so what does really throughput mean? Is it, you know, has to be like sequential, means different things. For latency, the same. And you have also like all these different devices, right? So how do you know that the system is congested when CPU is 80% or I have like 100 pending disk IOs? So how do you compare this stuff? And also you have all these machines that you don't really know what kind of hardware they have, right? So how do we measure congestion? So what we do is that we introduce a congestion metric. Congestion price has nothing to do with real money. And it's based on a work by Auerbach, presented at Fox in 93, based on throughput competitive online routing. And what we do is that we map the resource utilization to a congestion price. And we develop a model for storage systems based on online auctions that expresses this price, again, as an exponential function of the utilization. And you see this equation here, where PI is the congestion price, and PMAX is a maximum price that we use to normalize this. And UI is the resource utilization. And this congestion price is also dependent on a degradation factor, as we call it. So pretty much you have all these devices, right? And as congestion increases, you get different kind of degradation. So for a network, if you know if 50% of the network is utilized, no big deal, right? I have the rest 50%, so my throughput is not really affected. But for disks, for example, right, that each request affects the other, this degradation factor is different. So this in the paper that you'll see that this kind of equation is actually, it provides a log k competitive ratio to an optimal algorithm, right? So we have in theory some theoretical guarantees based again on k, the degradation factor. So what is nice about it, at least in my opinion, is that the theory makes no assumption about any devices. So we just need an expression of the utilization. Now, if you want to measure throughput, it's fine. Each device can be measured differently. You can measure CPU percentage utilization. You can measure throughput for disks. It's up to you. And also, the theory, you can use virtual devices, right? Like heuristics. So you want to see how useful is your class. You can express it in a way, and this function will normalize it. So what we measure is we measure pretty regular stuff. We measure network, CPU, memory, disk. We measure read-ahead effectiveness. There are a couple of heuristics that we use, more analytic on the paper. I mean, it's pretty well-known work. And cache effectiveness, as presented last year here. So this is the framework pretty much for congestion pricing and measuring the resources, right? So what we do about it with that actually is that we now try to schedule client operations based on the congestion metric, right? And the problem here is that you have all these NFS servers, all these file servers in general, that they operate under the assumption that the client benefit increases with server throughput, right? So the server says, okay, if I increase my throughput, all clients will be happy now. So in other words, he thinks that all client operations that they come are equally important, right? Now, previous talk also point out that client operations, they come at different priorities, and they build this out of protocol, let's say, schemes that how to control that. And they actually talk about explicitly low priority process, right? I have an indexing scheme and an exchange server, what do I do? So here we're gonna focus a little bit on implicit priority as synchronous and asynchronous operations. And by synchronous operations, I mean all these reads and metadata, and that must be performed on demand because applications block and wait for the operation to complete. And the asynchronous operations that are most writes because they go to memory first and then they reach the server or the disk, and read-aheads, and what's unique about these operations is that they can time shift a little bit. So there's no hard guarantee where they're gonna perform or when, and they really depend on the client state. So I'm gonna buffer some writes if I have available memory. If I don't, I have to send directly to the server. So our goal is to schedule these asynchronous operations in a way that they don't interfere with all these foreground requests, right? So if I have a write, I can wait a little bit and serve the read. So based on that, we have a reverse auction model. So clients and servers, they compute their congestion prices and based on the current utilization, right? And the servers advertise their prices to clients. We do that inside the NFS protocol. And client then compare the server prices with their local prices, and they decide, okay, what should I do with read-aheads? Should I send more aggressively read-aheads, or should I cancel at all, or should I send them more prudently? And also they decide to defer or accelerate writes. Now, I'm not gonna talk about much about the read-aheads. Everyone understands how. Just some clarifications about the writes is that when we accelerate a write, pretty much what we do is that we send the write immediately, we don't buffer it at the client, and the server, of course, syncs it to the cache. This happens when the server load is low. And the good thing about it is that since the client doesn't have to buffer it in memory, it can maintain its cache, right? So if the client observes that it has a high cache hit ratio through the congestion price, can say, okay, you know what, this is really important for me, I don't want to buffer any writes, I'm gonna send them to server, provided that his load is low. Now, of course, it has downside that consumes server resources immediately, but the idea is that the server load is low, so it doesn't really matter. So when we defer a write, we do exactly the opposite, and what's happening is that the client keeps the data in memory for a longer time than normal, so it doesn't, the PD flush or the flushing daemon doesn't kick in very soon. And it postpones the write because at that point, maybe the server load is high. Or the server has decided to serve other clients. And this faces the problem of like later when you decide to sync the data, maybe the server will be busy. But the server is busy anyhow, so I don't lose really anything to wait. And this doesn't change consistent semantics, right? Because this is different. The write operation is different than commit operation. It's different to send the data to the server than have the guarantee that the data are written to the server. So we have some heuristics there, not to defer very small rights and stuff, but these are not very very interesting. So a small example that it's just very, very basic. So here we have two clients, and I just print out the memory utilization, the read ahead effectiveness, the hit rate. So based on that, there are some prices, right? So based on that and the congestion pricing function, we compute a price. So for client one, this price is 85. And this is because, I mean, let's assume that 85 is a high price, right? And this is because the memory, actually, this client is getting short of memory, right? It's 80%. So this is, the client is about to run out of memory. And the other client has a pretty like low price for writes, because he has no memory problems. I mean, it would be nice if he could preserve the cache hit rate, but it's not the biggest issue, right? Also, the server has, like, for some reason, it does a lot of disk I.O., but the server is pretty good with the disk, actually, so it doesn't care that much. So it's let's say that these prices are 40 and 12. So what's important here is that client one price is higher than the server, client two price is lower than the server. So what happens is that we try to help client one by having him sending data and stopping client two. Imagine this a simple write-only workload, right? These two clients are sending write requests. What we do is that we want to help the client that's running out of resources. So at some point later, somehow the resource usage between this client balances out, and now the server price is lower than these two clients. So what we want to do is these two, we want to enable the other client to start sending data again. So through this process, what happened is that this system pretty much exchanged the resource congestion among the clients and the servers, right? So one client was able to take a small hit just to make the other client improve his throughput. So let's see some results. Like, so we have two different type of workloads here. There are more results in the paper. This will be very, very, very basic. So it's based on file bands, right? So we have the file server workload. That is pretty much real NFS traces, creates, deletes, reads, whatever you can find in a file server workload, has many synchronous operations, writes and stuff. And the second workload is OLTP based on Oracle 9. It's, you know, many small reads, writes, and many synchronous operations. So figure one is gonna, we're showing the average client throughput for NFS and CA NFS for the file server workload. And we present operations per second. So we see that for one client, the CNFS client is able to have higher throughput just because it can better manage its asynchronous operations. So pretty much, we stop sending some writes, we send some reads, and we pretty much finish the writes after most of the reads are finished based on server congestion again. So when the server congestion is low, we send the writes, otherwise we wait. So although for one client, the difference is not that much, right? When we go to eight clients, and this is lower because, again, I'm presenting average throughput, we see that CNFS it's about 30% better than regular NFS, and again with many clients we're able to exchange the resources between them, so that's why we get this approach, this improvement. To look a little bit more deep into this result, what happens is that we have all these write operations, right? All these write backs that we have to decide when to do them. And what you see here is that NFS tends to do them pretty early, right? So this is actually presents the average, the CDF of the time that a write is sent to the server after it enters the client system, pretty much, right? So you see that NFS tends to do them early. And CNFS, CANFS, what it does is that it smooths out this curve a little bit. So it provides a better system utilization. Moving on to the OLTP results, and here we see the, I'm showing the aggregate throughput as megabytes per second. Again, we see that for a small number of clients, CNFA is a little bit better, mostly because of the read ahead stuff. And as we actually increase the number of clients, at least in our system, when we reach a number of about 20 clients, 23, and this is not a magic number, I just had 24 machines, so I had to use one server, that's why it's 23. When we reach the number about close to 20 clients, actually NFS throughput drops because we kill the server. We send all these requests and the server doesn't know what to do, so at some point it takes a big hit, and then until it comes back, the aggregate throughput drops. So with CNFS, still we don't see the scale that we would like to see, you know, when we move from 12 clients to the double number, but still somehow we maintain the throughput, so it doesn't suffer from this crash that regular NFS does. So this is the results for now. Again, more results in the paper. Now, again, what we talk about is, you know, this performance management framework, right? And this scheduling of asynchronous operations is just a proof of concept of what we can do. We have all this nice stuff that I'm not sure if we're going to do, but it makes sense that, you know, we can be policy and priorities for synchronous operations. So we can say, okay, this indexing scheme, when server price reaches 80%, stop. Don't do anything anymore. One interesting issue is the fairness over time, that you have all these clients that, you know, you have one client that has driven up the prices, and it's not really fair for the others because this client is actually responsible for all the system load. How do we do that? And this has to be built into economic models and all these fairness criteria. Then we can do resource reservations. We can do proportional sharing based on salaries, and we can build this notion of flow control. These are just food for thought. So again, we built a performance management framework based on congestion, not based on external measures like throughput, latency. We case studied this economic anomaly that the client benefit does not always increase with throughput because the client requests have implicitly different priorities. And what we point out is that the server cost always increases with load, right? So the server sees the congestion no matter what. So what is different here is that instead of having this benefit-based system design, instead of having all these trying to maximize the throughput of the client based on what it sees from the server throughput, we have this cost-based, right? It's based on what the server sees as congestion. So that's about it for now, and I can take questions.
Irfan Ahmed, VMware. Can you talk a little bit about price fluctuations and kind of herding and any of those kinds of behaviors, especially as you scale out to a really large number of nodes, hundreds or thousands type of scale, and what you do to take care of that?
So I don't know about hundreds of thousands, but I can guess. So the idea is that if you really look deep into the system, you see, you do see price fluctuations, right? And you don't want the system to try to be overtuned, right? You don't want the system to try to adapt all the time. So there are a couple of heuristics that they can prevent this. For example, you don't really care about very low congestion. You don't really care if the server is 20% congested, right? When you care is about when the congestion reaches something really high. So when it reaches like 80% or 90% or something like that, right? Because before that, you don't really see anything on your client. So, this is the basic heuristic that prevents your system to overtune due to price fluctuation, you know, normally. Now, I have to look more deeply into if I have this number of clients, right? But up to 24 clients, I mean, you have some interesting, you know, ups and downs, but nothing that prevents your system to adapt.
Anirudh Bhara, NEC Labs. The question I have is, in any economic-based system, the key point of opt-in is an incentive. So what is the incentive for each of these clients individually? So why won't one just participate in the protocol and destroy the others?
So they can. And if they can, it means that they don't run my system. And if they don't run my system, they're not in my cluster. So, no, I mean, we control the file system client, right? And I mean, this is not an open system that everyone can bring, you know, his machine, plug it in, and try to access the file server. So imagine that you have your Linux box, and the NFS client does that. You cannot really control it. Now, if you want to, you know, to recompile the kernel and change it, it's feel free, but, you know. It's a different model. It's a legit concern, but it's a different model.
Hi, Reza Doc, Stony Brook University. Did you run this over TCP? And if so, I'm trying to understand conceptually why the standard TCP backoff stuff would not help here.
Because this is not network bound. It's the server runs out of memory. How does TCP know about that? It's that the disk, right?
Well, if the server runs out of memory, eventually something will cause it to drop some packets, right? Or maybe it depends on the OS there. So that would translate to backing off in the client, no?
It will not drop packets, right? When I say run out of memory, I mean run out of buffering memory, right? Or, I mean, when the server starts dropping packets, it's too late for the clients, right? Mm-hmm. You'll have all these TCP problems. But, I mean, let's say that we try to take measures before this happens. And TCP will be, I mean, will be, let's say, good enough if you're network bound, if your system cannot sustain the network rate. But what I see that is different here is that you have this congestion notion that goes beyond the network, right? It goes from the client memory to the server disk. Mm-hmm. So TCP could do a better job, but I don't think it would solve the problem.
Okay, and kind of a follow-up. A lot of people have looked over the years at adjusting TCP and UDP buffer sizes, R size and W size parameters. Have you looked at those? Because, you know, people have found that can make a huge difference.
Yeah. And it can be a big difference. It can be used as a tool pretty much to how to control the clients. I just, at this point, it's easier for me to do it at the application level. And always you can do some tuning at the network layer and you can get better performance. But I mean, see it as a black box pretty much, because I try to see it as a black box from the application level. It's, I mean, it will help, but it's kind of a nice to have feature, not important.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Hi, Sridhar Subramanian from Data Domain. I'm wondering how well resources like CPU and cache fit together in the same model, because in the CPU case, if a client utilizes a lot of it and drives the prices up, and then it's going to be expensive for him as well, and that'll kind of start to back off. But in the cache case, you know, in some sense, he could be holding on to a lot of cheap real estate and hence drive the prices up for everybody else while he still, you know, is using it. So
how do you compare resources, right? And the idea is that let's assume that this system does make it able to compare high utilization with low utilization, right? So the client has some sense of priorities, right? So the client can say, because it can adjust all these parameters, like the K parameter, so it can pretty much prevent the cache to reach a price that will be higher than the CPU price, right? So when you set up the system, you say that, okay, you know what, if I run out of CPU, I cannot do anything, so this is the most important thing. So I'll make sure that CPU will reach a higher price than anything else. So the cache is a nice-to-have feature, but it cannot reach as high price as CPU, right? So the CPU price will always be higher than the cache. And this is true for the client and the server, too. So this it's not a single price for all the resources, right? It's a different price. And the max price that can be reached is, again, different for other resources.
But if the lowest ceiling happens to be cache, then that will be the dominant factor showing up on the client, right?
Right. And you will try to preserve the cache if it's important for you. But if the server price is, if the server is CPU-bound, then the server will have a much higher price, even if the CPU utilization is 5% and the cache is 90%. Because you adjust these parameters to be fair.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.